Chapter 16 of When Thief Meets Thief by Harry Stephen Keeler. Tillery Stevens. At journey's end, and with capital consisting of only 90 cents and a ticket for my checked bag, I was vomited out into a street called Randolph Street, from some huge and brand-new 50-story railroad station that Chicago politicians, as I later learned, had just stuck up on her lakefront to keep her people from thinking about modern traction subways, the which the present people's fathers and mothers had commenced petitioning for only some 50 years before. And shortly, after a 20-minute bus ride northward from the station on some huge triple-decker bus, I found Tillery's residence. Not far, in fact, from a big green park. It was on a street of ancient and dignified mansions, all well kept up, and I rang the bell. Tillery himself, as chance would have it, answered the door. I saw at once, even after 15 years, that he was a poseur and a charlatan. His pointed brown beard, his mustache, his scarlet-framed monocle with broad black ribbon, his velvet jacket and black Windsor tie, not to mention the wide-brimmed gray velour hat and huge cane on the rack wall behind him, all told the story. He knew me, too, after all these years, and a flash of white swept across his face, but I did not divulge the reason for my errand. I told him just that I'd been in the far Canadian north for a few years, whence I'd gone practically direct from South America, where I'd been previously. And now, passing through Chicago, where I'd happened to find his name in the telephone book, I decided to drop in on him. He took me through his great house, where he lived, it seemed, with just a single manservant, now on several months' leave of absence. From the billiard room on the top floor to the beautifully, mechanically disappearing bar in the back parlor, replete with rare whiskies and cordials, thence, after a drink, to the cellar with a dank dirt floor and replete with mushroom beds, his hobby, as it likewise appeared. There at last we sat on upended boxes of carefully packed imported mushroom spores, under a single lighted electric bulb whose tint was such that it wouldn't make the little mushrooms about the cellar restive. "Tillery," I said curiously, "how come you never took up the study of dentistry?" "No, I did. For just 1 year, I took it up at Northwestern U here, but switched to the general arts." "And why, Tillery, if I may ask," I said next, "do you wear that beard and mustache, for you're only my age, and a monocle, too? For just a while back, when you laid it down for a moment in the upstairs hall to talk on the phone to somebody, I observed in trying your monocle out against the wall that it has no refractive power whatsoever." "Oh, Jerry," he said, "don't you realize that a clientele such as mine expects me to have a very picturesque appearance now and then in a thousand blue moons, like, for instance, when I go out on a long hunting trip or something, I shave it all off and growing it on again only after I get home. But for the most part, living here in Chicago, I give my clientele the appearance they expect. In other words, I capitalize myself." "Well, what clientele would that be?" Now I had him. "Oh," he said airily, "I write a little." And I saw that he figured I knew quite nothing of his thievings. And then I put my cards on the table. "Tillery," I said, "I have read all you have published to date. And Tillery, those books you've allegedly written are manuscripts which were in grandfather's trunk. You stole them from us, grandmother and me, and you must make restitution." "No," he said coldly, "I won't. For the simple reason that I bought them from Red. You remember Red? After you and your grandmother left Columbus, Ohio, it was Red, as is evident today, who pillaged your house. I never heard again where you were, and the statute of limitations of the state of Ohio prevents prosecuting me on an innocent purchase of stolen goods that far back, much less even registering a charge of such, on a direct theft from you of stolen goods, yes, of course, but not as an innocent buyer, which is exactly what I am in this case." "But good God, Tillery," I expostulated, "decency is decency. You evidently knew when you first decided to revamp them and publish them that I could never prove they were grandfather's scripts since you had possession of them all. But how about fairness? Now look here. Grandmother, of course, is dead. I have my grandfather's will here, and I showed it to him, for it was fortunately in my breast pocket at the moment. He really looked as though he would like to have fled with it and burned it up. But of course, craven that he was, he dared not. I should have the income, oh, a substantial part of it anyway, from those scripts which, it appears, are damned fine mystery novels, and not dime novels at all. No, he said in a granite mien. You should not. I am, after all, Jerry, a rare artist, and but for me they never could have reached print. It is I who have touched them with the magic gilding brush that has transformed them from dime novels into literature. Tosh and twaddle, I retorted curtly. I read the printed books, and I remember well the handwritten originals. The only difference between... Well, I could hire any Broadway hack writer at $25 a script if, of course, I had the scripts to make the substitutions that would change the 1870s into the 1935s and revise the lingo as you've done. You're no more an artist at the literary game than I am myself. You're just a pirate, says you, he said airily. I ought, I said bitterly, knowing that he had the upper hand, to kill you here and now. And since your lone servant has just gone away in a few months, you say, I should become, as it were, your new servant and live on here for a few months. In fact, killing you is exactly what I'm now going to do. And what would you do with my body, pray, meanwhile? Bury you right here under this rolled dirt floor and have fewer mushrooms. He threw back his head and laughed, actually chuckled. My dear fellow, he said, do you remember my showing you that big necromancer's crystal globe in my safe while you went through my study? Yes, a beautiful crystal globe and a damned fine safe. Burglar-proof, if you don't object to a mere comment. So I am informed. Well, I handed you that crystal with my fist tightly clutching the small round slate base, so that you had to take it by the ball itself, but that crystal was wiped meticulously clean of all fingerprints when last put in the vault, and you, therefore, left your entire five fingerprints smack on its surface. After you took it by its base of your left hand and looked through it, you handed it back to me. Only I took it by one exposed edge of the base and slid it into the vault, where, while you'd been gazing through the ball at objects about the room, I'd been writing your name and descriptions, the date and the hour, on a pink slip of paper, which also went into the vault. Remember that pink slip? I thought so. Well, sonny boy, it's got all the highlights that can capture you and identify you to the world over. In fact, the whole thing is an arrangement I've had a long time with the lawyers downtown. All suspicious persons who enter here, and I was damn suspicious of you right off. I make fingerprints themselves, and I book them up on a pink slip, just as I did you. Were I not to report to by phone my lawyer and encode within, let's see, he glanced at his wristwatch, 3 hours and 47 minutes. Now, since I reported 20 hours and 13 minutes ago, every 24 hours, you see, he'd be here with two private detectives and a duplicate key in combination and would open that vault. And you, before you'd even cross the Mississippi, would be nabbed. And thanks to the return of the good old rope in Cook County and the speeding up of criminal justice, would be hanged in exactly 30 days. I laughed bitterly, for I recalled indeed how mysterious he had been about his fool crystal ball and is filling out notes or something on a pink slip, and all. Yes, I commented, still bitterly. You're right, I guess, on all of that. All this criminology in your noodle comes from working over grandfather's mystery novels. Your last murderer-catching stunt must be something from one certain novel, which I, at least, never got to read. The fingerprints on the crystal ball. It is, Tillery said gloatingly. It was such a damn slick idea, I adopted it for my real life. Your grandfather had ideas, all right. And I said, you won't give me my monetary share of those ideas? Let's go upstairs to the parlor, he said, where there'll be less chill in the air than here near the damp floor. You can kill me up there just as well and drag my body downstairs and plant me under my mushrooms. Supreme confidence he had all right, and we were shortly sitting in his high-ceilinged parlor near a high Victorian desk. "About your last question," he resumed, "I won't give you any share of those ideas, for you're legally forfeited, I tell you, any share you ever had. I bought those ancient scripts for $6 from Red, which fact, however, considering my present huge writing reputation today, I would not now openly admit to anyone but you. And Red, incidentally, died some 7 years ago. He came to me here for help, practically dying then. TB. I managed to get him into the County Free Hospital, where he passed away in the best of comfort. But speaking again of the purely moral angle of this alleged theft from you and your grandmother, I kept those scripts solely for you, and for many years, but you people never wrote back to Columbus, Ohio, and so, as I say, the Ohio Criminal Limitation Statute outlaws completely your bringing any claim under the circumstances I've cited. Moreover, as a real literary artist, I've made those novels. And last but not least, you," he added triumphantly, "you have nothing to prove your wild story, since I have all the scripts, and not in this house either." "All you've said is true," I admitted, "and particularly the one point that implies I would make a damned ass of myself to try and bring charges against the famous Tillery Stevens." "All right," he said genuinely. "We're agreed on moral and legal and miscellaneous aspects of the situation. But, Jerry, tell you what I'll do before you go. I'll make you a lucrative proposition, for I can read with half an eye that you're flat broke." He paused. "Your dear and departed grandfather," Jerry wasn't at all up on the crook lingo, having been a clergyman, "and I've noted a number of genuine crook expressions in your talk, such as a certain police expert who recently went over the crook talk in each of my novels at $100 per novel used to insert. This fellow, however, was bumped off last week by gangsters. Now you, Jerry, are doubtlessly a crook all right, and for a full glossary of all crook expressions, those used among yeggmen and whatever else not, I'll pay you $1 a word." This was almost amusing under the circumstances, for I was no crook at all except for the one job on the cat killer. And though I had all that Tillery needed, I had it simply because Cape Town Slim in those long months in that South American dungeon had made me learn the entire lingo of his trade, teaching me as though it were another language, and because today, when no word or expression quite fitted a situation, I often inadvertently snatched one or another from Cape Town Slim's specialized expressions, which did fit. "Good," I said quickly to Tillery. "But will you play a no-limit game? Hundreds of words, perhaps?" Tillery nodded eager affirmation. "Then give me," I told him, "a pad of sheets, a big pad." And in the next half hour, I earned $350. For rooting against the Oliver, Cracksman's talk, meaning to work by the moonlight only, bought me $4. Full of larceny, open for bribery, $3. Run the roads down, look over all the possible escapes with a car, $4. Market for stiffs, banker who buys stolen bonds, $3. And the many names for a gang leader, Big Shot, Red Hot, Big Rod, Mocker, Heavy Guy, fetched $9. A 4th of July, Gun Battle After a Getaway, $4. The synonyms for Belady of Crookdom alone, Broad, Dame, Floozy, Skirt, Chippy, Roach, Mole, Frail, $8.08. I cashed in and with a vengeance on all the linguistic part of what that poor devil back in that dungeon cell had taught me a few years back, cashed in to the tune of $350, which Tillery paid. And I had reasons for giving him all that lingo. I wanted Tillery now to be entirely up on his own profession, to be able to wax more successful than ever, as it were. When I rose to go, I was the height of geniality, and I said, "Well, Tillery, old top, since you did buy the scripts from Red, I can't very well claim them, since after all it was up to Grandmother and me to come back, or to write back, neither of which things we ever did. However, Tillery, you say you're going to be without a manservant till yours gets back? And from a few cracks you made a while back, I imagine you wish you could tell me never to come back, Ever try a Southern Negro, Tillery? You just know nothing of servants till you have. And a Southern Negro did me a great favor in South America. A chap called just Laughing Sam, or Sam Davis in full. Faithful, industrious, intelligent, loyal. I could route him up for you in El Paso towards where I happen to be heading now. And you would have a man who'd knock all your white northern servants into a cocked hat, and at the same time help me pay back my debt to him. Will you do that much for me? Yes, I will, he said. Send on your coon. I've always fancied I'd like a coon servant, a southern one, I mean, for I've heard they never talk back and will even take a rap on the snoot and actually like it. Send him on. I'll get a temporary man from the bureau around the corner till your man gets back, and I hope to hell I can tell that cocky devil who works here regularly to stay where he is. Yes, send your paragon on. And with this I left, and with more than a smile on my lips. Artillery had slipped badly, for Red, as I remembered more than well, had been in the state reform school when that trunk was stolen, had already been there several months, couldn't have stolen the stuff, hence Tillery couldn't have bought it from him. Tillery had convicted himself as a liar. And so, with the money he had paid me for the criminal lingo, I went to El Paso to find Laughing Sam. For it would have to be through Laughing Sam only that I would be able to get justice.